Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio, the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. We are here under less than ideal circumstances today. It is obviously the end of the Pochettino era. Four points out of five matches, that's not very good. I know Ben has been predicting this for a long time, so let's jump right into it. With us today, we have our eternal sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing? Do you feel vindicated?
Oh, yeah. I've been quietly waiting for Pochettino to fail so I can gloat about it.
Quietly.
Very quietly. the only joy I ever take from this team is from other people's misery, so this is perfect for me.
Fair enough. Next up, we have our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah.
Really excited to talk about Spurs.
just a really great day to talk about them.
It's just the most fun.
Yeah, so we lost to Leicester 2-1 on the road today. It wasn't super great. I think there was about one positive this entire match. But we'll get to that in a minute. Ben, I don't want to sound like I'm apologizing or making excuses for this team, but there is a argument to be made that Spurs didn't play that badly today. We gave up two pretty good goals to Leicester. And frankly, if we'd finished a little better, we probably would have won this game. I feel like that is a factually correct argument. I also feel like I make excuses for the team when I say it. Where do you land on this beyond your take that Pochettino is a fraud?
Yeah, that was tough to sit through. I mean, you're right. You know, Leicester had two chances really all match, and both of them were ridiculous goals that Hugo Lloris had, you know, no chance of saving. You know, we probably shouldn't have allowed those chances, but, you know, Mahrez shooting from 20 yards out and, you know, that ridiculous Zlatan-esque finish from Jamie Vardy typically doesn't happen. But they did, and, you know, the Vardy chance happened early enough that we had plenty of time to come back from it. And instead of doing so, we let them score another wonder goal. It was demoralizing. And it's very frustrating because, as you said, we had all of these chances. You know, Eriksen somehow had a chance from 3 yards out and put it out for almost a throw-in. Llorente, who I don't know what the fuck he's there to do if not tap in chances like that. Skye went over the bar. You know, we had chances early where Sissoko hit it straight at the keeper. There are a lot of chances. I'm not going to run through them all. It was just like one of them should have fucking gone in. Like, at least a draw. You know, even allowing for Leicester's two great goals, like, we should have scored at least twice in that game.
It's particularly irritating because not quite as much as this game, but I feel like that same argument can apply to the West Brom game where, I mean, I think West Brom did a better job of stopping us from doing what we wanted to do, but that's another game where it's like, you know, you look at it, like, West Brom got a little lucky. We created a bunch, and we were a little unlucky not to win it, but it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm much more bothered by the West Brom game than I am this game, even though we managed a point against West Brom.
True, but West Brom was also just doing the West Brom thing that they do, and that on some level, that bothers me less, because we made a dumb mistake, and West Brom was just able to do their thing. But yeah, we certainly created more against Leicester today.
West Brom's goal was a comedy of errors. You know, Dele Alli in midfield completely fucked up on the initial ball. He got schooled by Jake Livermore, which, like, should never happen. Jake Livermore is terrible. You know, Davinson Sanchez in a one-on-one with Rondon got just totally bodied off the ball. And then Hugo Lloris didn't even move on the slowest, worst shot I've ever seen go into the back of the net. You know, all of that was preventable in a way that you look at the Leicester goals and you're like, you know, at some point you just kind of throw your hands up and be like, well, fuck, that happened. And the other thing is you know all West Brom wants is one goal and then they're going to camp on that lead forever. Like, the one thing you can't let West Brom do is score an early goal and make you play West Brom's game for 90 minutes. And we played exactly into their hands. You know, and we didn't create really good chances. We crossed the ball to nobody. We took a lot of shots from outside the box that were, you know, blocked by walls of defenders between us and the goal. It was just, you know, a complete failure to execute anything resembling a game plan on our part. You know, the Leicester match, we were just really unlucky in a lot of ways. We weren't great for stretches of the match, but, I mean, the West Brom match was just bad.
Michael, where on the Arsenal fan TV scale should Spurs be in crisis mode right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, you know, the situation is that we were in really good shape and now we're not in terms of our place in the table. 538 has Spurs and Arsenal Liverpool basically even for most likely fourth, and United and Chelsea are still catchable. So, like, it's still tight. We're not, like, and I don't see any particular reason to think that we're screwed, but we were in really good shape and now we're not, and now this team needs to get a few more good results to balance it out. You know, you can look at problems with the squad, but that's the basic thing that happened. It was that things were really good and now they're not that great. But I don't see a lot of reason to think that this team is suddenly, like, clearly not good.
Yeah, the game that really concerns me, and we just haven't podcasted about it, we won't focus too much on it now, but the game that really bothers me is the Arsenal game. That is the one that, if I watch it back, concerns me the most. I can sort of rationalize away the other ones, but we got our ass whipped against Arsenal. And that is, you know, that is really concerning to me. I understand that we have a lot of guys tired and a lot of guys out, and Arsenal's sort of rounding into form a little bit, but, you know, I don't like how that game went, especially considering how we played teams like Liverpool earlier in the year.
I mean, I think Michael kind of hit the nail on the head here. The big issue is we had an advantage despite having hiccups along the course of the season. You know, we were in a position of strength relative to the other teams we're competing with for top four. And the past month has really seen us surrender that. You know, our losses this season to Chelsea and Man United were games that we played broadly well in and we got a little unlucky in. This Leicester game, we were very good in for most of it, and again, we were unlucky. And, you know, the fact that we dropped those points doesn't mean that we're a bad team, but it means that's a lot of points that we're going to now have to make up down the stretch. And it puts us in a hole that's going to be really hard to dig ourselves out of. So, you know, seeing this loss to Leicester doesn't make me think, oh, Spurs are bad now. It just means, you know, we have to be pretty perfect and pretty lucky. Otherwise, you know, we're in a tough spot. And that's a position that nobody wants to be in, especially when you have a run of winnable fixtures like we just did, and besides the Arsenal match, you know, and blew it.
And the thing that bugs me is that, like, there are little edges that we could have had in all of these games with a little more depth.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a backup center forward who wasn't dead, that would help. If we had a backup attacking midfielder who wasn't Moussa Sissoko, that would help. And the team didn't do a good job of filling key spots on the roster, and so those players then being sort of zeros that we have to carry in important moments, you know, costs us on the margins in games where the margins matter a lot.
I think it's easy to overlook because Sissoko has been not quite as dreadful as he was last year, and we were able to use him in some pretty big victories this year. It's easy to forget sometimes just how much of a problem. You're right. It's not so much even like how bad is he this year. It's like how much better a player could we be putting in there if we weren't carrying his, you know, whatever the hell his salary is around, and, you know, what if we were paying that to a more useful player? Putting aside the substitution thing, I mean, what is, are Spurs doing something tactically wrong? Is it just exhaustion? These guys have played a lot of minutes between internationals and, you know, fixtures over the last couple months. I mean, I think Eriksen is probably the one who seems to be feeling it the most right now. But, I mean, do you think it's just that level of exhaustion is hitting everybody at the same time?
I think that exhaustion looks like it's clearly an issue with Eriksen. The other thing that I think is that it's increasingly clear, like, just how good Toby Alderweireld is and how the passing that he provides from the back. You know, Vertonghen can make runs from the back, and Dyer, his passing from the back has been somewhat disappointing, but in theory he can do some of that. But when Leicester were putting us under pressure in early in the game and sort of the first part of the second half, we struggled to move the ball out of the back. Arsenal pressed the absolute crap out of us, and our back three did not handle it well at all. Alderweireld would have done a better job. And then when teams are sitting back, we don't have Alderweireld's diagonals. You just want him to get healthy, but the team needs to find some solutions in both situations for what we can do when he isn't there. Those have been the things that I've seen that haven't been as good. I don't think that there's something wrong with, like, Pochettino's tactics or something wrong broadly with the team, but I think that the missing Toby has had a bunch of knock-on effects across the team that it could be handled better at this point.
So, I mean, there's a lot of problems with Spurs right now, but I do want to focus on the one positive from today's match, which was Eric Lamela returned to the team. This podcast favorite Tottenham player on Tottenham Hotspur is finally back, and he made an impact right away in his first minute on the field. He assisted, a really good assist, actually, to Harry Kane to get us on the score sheet. I was extremely happy for Eric Lamela. This is a player I think we've seen who's gone from, you know, he was really kind of ridiculed when he came in as our most expensive signing ever, and a lot of, certainly the media was just ready to ship him out of here back to Italy almost as soon as he got here. And today was kind of interesting because when Spurs got it, when announced he was going to be on the bench, I mean, the sort of universal euphoria among Spurs fans was quite something to see. And I think it just speaks to how much that guy has really transformed people's opinions of him over the last few years. I mean, Ben, what did today tell you about Eric Lamela? Because not only did he have an assist, but he almost got red carded. I mean, the level of form in which he played was, I was worried it would take a while for us to see Eric Lamela back to what we were used to, but he's playing great passes, he's making assists, he's almost getting sent off. I mean, it was like he never left, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was almost the perfect Eric Lamela hat trick, but unfortunately, he stayed on the pitch like a coward.
What is the Eric Lamela hat trick? It's assist, miss a goal that he probably should have scored, and get sent off. Is that it?
Yeah, it's maybe an uncalled dirty elbow, and then a red card in there somewhere. No, it was great to see Eric Lamela back. You know, it was also a frustrating reminder of our failure to build a squad.
Ben, I like your commitment to the brand. I appreciate your commitment to your brand.
Yeah. I mean, so look, Eriksen has been off for basically since the international break when he went, you know, 180 minutes for Denmark to see them through to the World Cup. You know, he's played most every minute available for Spurs this season. You know, we have no other replacement for Christian Eriksen. We run his ass into the ground. He's hugely important to how we play. And you can just see him be fatigued, you know, particularly after that international break. He isn't pressing the way he usually does. He isn't making himself available the way he usually does. You know, he's not harrying guys. He's not forcing turnovers. You know, he's still good with the ball at his feet, but he's not that complete all around, you know, phenomenon that he usually is. And we've suffered as a result of it. And everybody knew going into the season that we probably needed a backup for Christian Eriksen. You know, Eric Lamela was dead, and he's the only guy who could possibly replicate anything coming close to what Eriksen does.
So let's take that. Let's take that as a devil. I'll play devil's advocate here. So you're Daniel Levy. You're looking at this squad. Obviously, you would like someone to be backing up in some level Christian Eriksen, and you've got Eric Lamela. And I believe when the season started, people were talking about Lamela getting back in October. So is it unreasonable if Spurs were like, you know what, we're going to get through 2 or 3 months with no real backup for Eriksen, because why add another guy to the roster who's going to play in that position when Lamela is probably coming back? Now, obviously, there's some caveats here about we don't know how healthy Lamela is going to be. We don't know how effective he's going to be as a player. But let's assume for the sake of argument they think he's going to be a reasonably complete player when he comes back. Is it wrong that they waited so long or that they didn't go buy someone when they basically they thought they were going to have a player coming back in 2 or 3 months?
I mean, gambling on a guy who's been out for a year to back up one of the best attacking midfielders in the world is a terrible gamble. I mean, the odds on that have got to be very long. And we saw Lamela be set back with injury or, you know, mental problems or whatever it's been that's kept him out for so much longer, than we thought he was going to be out for, you know. And you think, we probably should have signed an extra body, especially because, you know, that guy could have taken the 1,000 minutes we've already given to Moussa Sissoko this season along the way. And so having Eric Lamela back is just the brightest ray of sunshine I can imagine right now. It is, you know, he is a wonderful player who we all love very dearly. He does a lot of things that very few people in the squad are capable of. And so going forward, I'm just thrilled that we have him again. But I adamantly believe it was a mistake to not sign somebody in that position. We were looking at Ross Barkley presumably for that purpose. It's not like we didn't think it was necessary. It's just Ross Barkley ended up being injured, and we didn't have a plan B. And so here we are. And like Michael said, it's those margins that are going to matter.
Yeah, I absolutely understand those margins. It's just, I think what's one of the things that's interesting, and maybe Spurs knew this. We certainly didn't know this in the summer, is with this sort of increased tactical flexibility that we're seeing out of Pochettino this year, one of the things I'm most excited about Lamela coming back for is, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast a little bit before, is like, I think we're going to see him get used in, I don't want to say totally new ways, but we're going to see him get used a lot differently than we've seen him before this year. I think you're going to see him on the right. I think we might see him as a wing back occasionally. I think we're definitely going to see him playing, you know, attacking midfielder a lot more often for a lot more prolonged periods of time than we have in the past. And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but I think today was really promising in terms of it's only about 20 minutes. So who knows when we're going to start him again? I'd love to see him start this weekend if Spurs think he's up to it, or, you know, maybe even next week in the against Apoel, since that game doesn't mean anything. It might be a good time for him to knock off some rust. But I was really impressed with what he was able to do on the pitch, not just the assist, but, I mean, he looked lively. I mean, he did not look like a guy who was coming off a year-long layoff. I mean, it didn't look like he was, you know, hesitant with the ball. He wasn't blowing passes. I was very impressed by what we saw from him today. And obviously, the real issue with Lamela is going to be, can he stay fit? Can he play prolonged periods of time? And we're only going to find that out with time. But I was very excited by what we saw. What did you think?
I agree. I mean, I think we got, you know, the best possible version of Lamela back in this 15-minute cameo that we saw. You know, he was very involved. I think in 15 minutes he had 15 passes, which, you know, over 90 minutes, that adds up to 90 passes over 90 minutes. I mean, that's nobody I think on our team had that many. Even the center backs, who I think Vertonghen had 80 something passes. He was on the ball a lot. He was putting in challenges. He was aggressive. He was engaged. You know, he was exactly the Eric Lamela that we last saw, you know, a year ago. And if he can stay healthy, God willing, you know, it was a very encouraging cameo.
And I mean, all I could think of when I was watching it was like, Christ, this is what we needed against West Brom. Like, between his physicality and his eye for passes, you know, I just think he's so good. I mean, he's just so good at breaking defenses down. And, you know, like, he just gives us another option, especially when we play him with Eriksen. And it's just, oh, I missed him so much. He was so good.
Yeah, and he's different from Eriksen in ways that are important. Like, as good as Eriksen is creatively, you know, Eric Lamela always had the most through balls of anybody on the team. You know, he plays those passes into the box that are very incisive and very smart. And like you said, against a team like West Brom, that would have been huge.
Well, he also brings a physicality. I mean, he's probably – him and Kane are probably the two guys on the team who combine that sort of, like, push, you know, physicality with also, like, a sort of a wide range of passing and creativity. I mean, Dembele does his own sort of thing, but he's not exactly an elite passer. But, God, it was just – oh, it's so great to see Eric Lamela out there. And I missed him so much. I mean, do you think we're going to – I mean, how much – I talked a little bit earlier about I think we're going to see him used in a lot of different ways this year. Do you think we're going to see Pochettino really deploy him in ways that – in a more diverse way than we're used to?
So it is an interesting question because the Eric Lamela that we all know and love in the 2015-16 season, he played on the right in a 4-2-3-1 system that we have largely abandoned. In his absence. And it's a real question of what does this team look like now that he's a viable option again? Do we revert back to that back four so we can squeeze in another attacking midfielder? Does he just become a rotation option for Eriksen? Do we try to use him as a wing back to get, you know, his ability out wide on the pitch? I don't know. I really have no idea what we can use him for, but I can see a lot of different ways that he can be useful in our existing system, and a lot of reasons why abandoning our system to accommodate him also makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think he presents a lot of questions for Pochettino that, you know, I'm sure he's been thinking about, but I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I'm curious to see what we do to fit him into the team, because on form, he certainly warrants a spot. He's too good to leave out.
So I was talking about somebody with this earlier today, because back before Lamela got hurt, it always felt like the choice that had to be made, at least in terms of picking a starting lineup, was Son or Lamela. And I actually, there was a point in time which I thought Son was going to push for a transfer because Lamela was getting all the starts, and then Lamela got hurt and that stopped sort of becoming an issue. But I think if we're deploying him in midfield, we might see both of them on the pitch a lot, but the discussion that I was having about this led me to think, if you had to choose between one of them, if you're picking that lineup and you've got to choose that attacker and you've got to pick between Lamela and Son, obviously different teams, you're going to want different strategies, but sort of generally speaking, which would you prefer to see starting for Spurs if you had to pick one or the other?
Honestly, like, I don't love the comparison. To me, it's much more a choice between Dele Alli and Heung-Min Son. The two of them,
they're far more similar, I agree with you, but it never, and correct me if I'm wrong, it always seemed to me like it was Lamela and Son competing for minutes back before Lamela got hurt. It always seemed like it was one or the other with those two, at least to start a match.
It was, and you're right, and I don't know. I mean, again,
and they are very different players. That's part of why I'm interested in this question.
I love Heung-Min Son. I'm going to have to go Lamela, but yeah. Again, I'm also like, Dele Alli hasn't had the best of seasons. We've seen it in flashes in a few games where he's been excellent. I'm kind of of the opinion that I wouldn't mind letting Son have a run of the team and let Dele work his way back in. Michael, is that crazy?
I mean, I think that, like, I think these sorts. I mean, I don't have any particular belief. I mean, Dele's been fine. He's got 5 goals and 4 assists over the first 40 seasons, and those numbers turned out to a perfectly good year. He's been perfectly useful. He hasn't been amazing or anything. And Sonny's also been good. Like, their games were. The issue for me is that, like, we're not going to need to play our absolute best first 11. It's not going to be a good idea for us to play our absolute best first 11 until, like, February. Like, right now, we just have to get through these games, which means that all these guys need lots of minutes, which means that, like, the smart thing to do is to find organizations of them that work, which means sometimes maybe resting Dele, which means sometimes finding minutes for somebody else. I think we got a lot of time before we need to make those choices, and I don't have to me, the choice between Dele and Son is much more a tactical choice based on what we want to do and what the opposition looks like, rather than one of them looks like a stronger option than the other.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And I think that's something that's really easy to forget when you, you know, you want to put out your fantasy 11, but the reality is the big blessing of Eric Lamela is just that he allows us to rest and rotate. And now we have four guys who can play those attacking midfield spots pretty interchangeably and not have the, you know, Moussa Sissoko drop off.
Yep.
And that's probably the thing.
Just forget, I guess, forget Son and Lamela, but like, just imagine being able to put Eric Lamela on a team and leave Sissoko on the bench. That's a nice dilemma to have, or a nice choice to be able to make. So, things have looked bad for Spurs, but in the last few games. But I guess the one bright spot is we won our Champions League group, our very extremely difficult Champions League group that Ben was extremely mad we got picked into. We have beat out Real Madrid. We have beat out Dortmund. It should be noted that Dortmund somehow surrendered a 4-goal lead. They ran up on Schalke this weekend, so maybe not quite as good as we thought they were, but still. Spurs beat Dortmund in Dortmund 2-1 in our interregnum here. And it is kind of insane that we have beat Real Madrid and Dortmund to win this group. I guess, Ben, I'll start with you because you were sort of the most skeptical of this group when we started this whole Champions League journey. I mean, is this a big deal? I mean, how do you think this sets us up for the knockout stages? I guess, how crazy is all this?
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. And, like, let me be clear, I wanted an easy group, not because I thought we weren't good enough to play a good group, but it's easier to beat easy teams. Like, okay. That's just how it works.
Tell that to Monaco and Leverkusen, but okay.
But the reality was, Monaco was really good that year.
I know. We just didn't know it until, like, 4 months after we lost them.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's fucking awesome. And the memories from winning those games are going to be memories I will treasure forever. I mean, that's all fantastic. The Champions League campaign has been a real bright spot over the last couple weeks. And we're positioned. I think Bayern Munich and Juventus are the two teams that, like, we absolutely don't want to draw, but for the most part, we're set up pretty comfortably.
I mean, Michael, you pay attention to world football a little more than, well, maybe not as much as Ben, but you know, you're certainly more than me. I mean, my peripheral understanding of the Bundesliga this year is I'm not so sure we don't want to draw Bayern. I mean, obviously they still have a lot of good players, but I mean, is Bayern really a poison pill?
I mean, I'd rather not draw Bayern. They're definitely not as good as they were before, but like before they, I mean, the thing that's happened in world football this year, I think, is that all of the big teams are playing at a somewhat lower level than they used to. Everyone's playing maybe a way of saying is everyone's sort of more at Juventus level, and there isn't anyone obviously at the Bayern, Barca, Real Madrid level other than Man City. Is the weird thing that's going on. But it's not like you would have wanted to draw Juventus last year. That's the kind of level we're talking about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. It's just, I guess to me, it just the drop off at Bayern is just so much more noticeable than at any of those other clubs you talked about.
Yeah, and it is. I think it's much clearer that Bayern have dropped off than that the others have. Although I think I tend to think it's happened at all three.
I mean, they all have aging squads. You know, Bayern has had managerial troubles. But, I mean, again, it's like, even if Bayern are a weaker version of Bayern, they're still the best team we could draw, so let's not draw them. That seems like, I don't know, the obvious wish. Yes, if we do draw Bayern, I hope we beat them. And that would be really fun and cool. But if we could, you know, just sneak into the quarterfinals by playing shitty teams, I'm also very okay with that.
No, that would be great. That is the Arsenal Cup strategy. I have no problems with following.
The Arsenal Cup strategy is play Bayern Munich in the next round and go home.
Oh, I was talking about the FA Cup, but yeah, that too.
I mean, it would be a nice a nice moment to do what Arsenal has failed to do for so many years, and that is beat Bayern over two legs. And so if it happens, you know, bring it on. Like, I mean, like we've said before, you've seen this team play Real Madrid and Dortmund the way that they have. I think we all feel confident that we can beat anybody on our day. Again, it's just, why play the hard teams?
It's just, it's weird how confident I feel about this compared to where I felt. I mean, obviously beating Real Madrid, or taking 4 points off of Real Madrid and 6 points off of Borussia Dortmund will do that to you. But it's just, I don't know. It's just like, if we could beat Real Madrid, shit, like, bring on Bayern. I don't give a damn. Like, I mean, Barcelona and City are probably the only two teams I'm genuinely scared of. Although, you know, I wouldn't love our chances against Real Madrid in a knockout game, but I'll take it. I mean, we did it once. Why can't we do it again? I don't know. It's so weird to be in this situation. I feel like the last time we advanced out of the group stage of the Champions League, it felt like we snuck out a little bit, like out of a kind of a mediocre group. But I don't think anyone could say that this time.
Well, I mean, they could. As you said, Dortmund are a lot worse than we thought they were.
I mean, Madrid are still
struggling in La Liga.
They're still Madrid. I mean, they're not struggling that much.
But are they? They are. They're behind, like, Valencia.
Oh. Well, apparently that's Gareth Bale's fault, so, you know. That'll get fixed in short order, I suppose. Michael, yeah. Is there any particular team you're dying to play in the next round?
I think there's a who is a I think that, you know, Roma would be let's just say let me pick a team that I want us to face so that we can draw them and lose to them. But Roma look really mediocre to me, and they look likely to be a second place team that we could sort of pick up and should be able to handle.
Well, Spurs fans going to Rome, what could go wrong? Hopefully, yeah. We don't get a repeat of the last time. That would be nice. But yeah, no, I think this was a huge achievement by Spurs to win this group. And I think what's going to be the only frustrating thing about this Champions League campaign is when we start all of our regulars against Apoel next week. Right, Ben?
Inevitably.
I mean, no one's going to get rested. Except maybe.
Harry Kane wants to set Champions League goal records, and Pochettino's going to let him.
Jesus.
Yep. Eriksen's going to rest, but I'm definitely scared that Kane.
So this is the thing. I
if there's ever a match you can play Fernando fucking Llorente.
No, if there's ever a match you can play Marcus fucking Edwards in, like, I am. Spurs fans are like completely insane when they talk about Marcus Edwards, but if, like, we are playing a Cypriot team in a Champions League game at home that means nothing. Like, if there's ever a game where it's like, let's roll out the under 20s and see what they can do and, like, play Eric Lamella for 60 just to knock off some rust and give Foyth a couple minutes, like, this is it. This is the time to do it. Like, generally speaking, I think when people want to play the youth, I think they get a little carried away and I think they overestimate what these kids are capable of. But this is a time where it doesn't matter if we're overestimating what these kids are capable of. This, let them all play in a Champions League game that means absolutely nothing. Like, it's a team that they might have a chance of beating.
Yeah, I want to see all the kids. I want to see Oakley Booth. I want to see Edwards. I want to see Kyle Walker-Peters. I want to see fucking Keziah Sterling. I don't care.
Realistically, who among those do you think might get a start? Walker-Peters, is that it? Foyth, probably.
Yeah, I would say Walker-Peters, Foyth, and that's it. Maybe Oakley Booth.
I could maybe see Edwards, but Pochettino's really gone out of his way this year to, like, tamp down expectations on him, so maybe he'll leave him out on purpose, but
yeah, maybe Nkudu will play.
Oh, all right. Fucking calm down, Ben. Like, time to cut you off.
I forget he's on our team.
I know.
Anybody else?
Everybody forgets he's on our team. Maybe Georgiou will play after he signed his new contract with us. He did play against Apoel the last time we played them, so.
It's true. He is Cypriot, so.
I mean, that is literally the only reason I think he might play. But I would just like us to see, how rare do we get a game like this where it means nothing and we could honestly stand to rest a lot of our team?
Well, don't worry. We're going to have the whole rest of the season where our games mean nothing.
I appreciate your commitment to your brand.
Sorry. This is getting really optimistic in a way that I'm not comfortable with. I had to remind you guys that we lost to Leicester City today, and everything's terrible.
Jesus Christ. That's so frustrating. That is so frustrating. So how are we going to lose to Watford this weekend, guys?
I mean, I think pretty comfortably, but it will be a very good audition for our next manager, Marco Silva, to show Daniel Levy what he's capable of.
So is Pochettino going to move up, you know, fail up or down? What do you think?
Oh, fail down. You know, the whole season's over. We're just going to implode down the stretch.
No. I mean, when he leaves Spurs, is he going to move up in the world, or is he going to go to like Zenit?
Oh no! If this season craters like I'm expecting it to, you know, he's bound for Crystal Palace or something next.
Oh, you think he stays in the Premier League? That's an interesting. You think he stays in a first division?
I mean, you know, at best.
If
Aston Villa don't get promoted, maybe they'll take a flyer on him.
I mean, Leeds is still a big team. They could maybe get Pochettino to go there. So,
yeah, we'll see. I don't know if he can hack it down there.
So I want to share a rumor that I am extremely excited about that popped up today. Our old friend Andre Villas-Boas is apparently starting to get linked with the Everton job. Now, by linked, I mean Duncan Castles tweeted something about it, which means that AVB is probably angling to get the job and there is no actual connection. But I am so excited to see this happen. I am so excited to watch him get relegated with Everton. Michael, is this something you sit up and dream about, Royal Blue Mersey's like apocalyptic, like cosmic horror level tweets when he gets there?
He'll be fine. He's not a bad manager.
He's awful.
Got beautiful eyes.
Oh, my God. They're going to hate him so much. And I'm going to love every minute of it.
I mean, they were all excited about having Koeman as their manager. Like, AVB is not less exciting than Ronald Koeman.
Yes, he is. I mean, Ronald Koeman, like, what, 2 years ago? When did he get to Everton? Like, that was a pretty fun Southampton. AVB has never coached a team that fun.
They really were not that fun.
Everyone thinks
they were. That team just crossed the ball into the box and held their defensive shape and had good players.
That's still more fun than any team AVB's had, so. I guess watching Gareth Bale was pretty fun.
That's not true. We have Gareth Bale, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's incidental, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that Koeman had Sadio Mane. I mean, that's basically where they were.
I feel like the likely scenario if Everton went to AVB, he would save their season. Next year, he might even get him finishing 7th or 6th, like where Everton's supposed to be. And I feel like those fans would have a Tony Pulis-level revolt in like 2 or 3 years. Like, they would like him for about a year because he got them out of trouble. And then they would realize the sort of unending mediocrity that they have rebought into, and they would all like rebel against them in a few years. If AVB doesn't like completely like blow his own foot off with the hierarchy at Everton, which looks like a very realistic thing that you can do there. So
I think after this season, unending mediocrity will be such a breath of fresh air to them that they will welcome it.
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping Everton.
They dreamed big. They flew a little too close to the sun this season. They got a little big for their britches. And after this, they're going to welcome the warm embrace of 7th.
After they just take a look at where Aston Villa is hanging out these days.
Exactly. They're going to see, you know, what happens when you get above your station like that and it all goes wrong. And they're going to be happy to be the 7th best team in England forever.
Honestly, I just hope they, you know, they get Arby's as a shirt sponsor. They become world football's first nihilist football team and just actively seek relegation every year until they no longer exist. Because it's been too much for them. They thought they were going to challenge for the title, and now they're in a relegation battle. It's delightful.
Man, this has been a really bad couple of weeks for Spurs, huh?
Yeah.
We're
stuck laughing at Everton. That's how bad things are.
They're not that bad, though.
Everton are pretty funny.
Yeah, especially if AVB goes there. It'll be pretty great. Maybe AVB and a couple players will take photos dressed up like old dock workers like he did.
No, what they should do is have AVB and Big Sam be co-managers, and they fight every week who has players like them on the team, and that manager gets the most votes gets to manage the team that week.
So you could just make Big Sam their manager then? I don't think AVB is going to win many popularity contests in England.
Well, as Big Sam keeps demanding like a tenth of their wages to play, I think
Aaron Lennon will be that one guy in the locker room. No, guys, he's great. Trust me. I rounded a keeper with him once. It's going to be fantastic.
Oh, our season is in shambles.
Oh, God, Ben. It's not that bad yet.
We're sitting here laughing at an imagined ABB run Everton to make ourselves feel better. Like,
this is the interesting thing. We had a nightmare.
As dark as it's gotten for us in a while.
We had a nightmare fixture list in like October going into November, and we handled it really well. Now, part of that's because we ran ourselves into the ground doing it, and now we're sort of reaping that whirlwind. But it's, you know, we've lost to some bad teams that we probably should have beat. We probably should have beaten all the teams we've lost to recently. And
yeah. Arsenal.
Yes, exactly. Arsenal
had a 95th minute handout penalty to beat Burnley.
Yeah, I wish we had that level of luck, but apparently need to be in the Europa League for that, or so I'm told. I wouldn't know. It's incredibly frustrating. I don't know. How do you... I mean, Ben, I can guess. But Michael, how do you think we're going to fare over our incredibly insane Christmas fixture list?
I mean, we've got at Watford, and we've got City, and the rest of them are not the hardest games have all year.
We haven't had any problem with not the hardest games, so...
The last two, I think the team is going to bounce back to being pretty good and not being quite as good as they should be because the depth isn't there. I don't see any reason to think that we won't be like right in the fourth place race at the end of at the end of these fixtures, and that is not where I thought we were going to be a month ago, but it's what we look like right now, which is a team that is competing for fourth.
Well, that's frustrating.
Think about the Christmas fixtures is while we've struggled with, you know, a heavy fixture load over the last month or two, when we hit December, everybody is going through the same thing. And so, you know, Arsenal can't play the kids and Jack Wilshere every other match. You know, your West Broms, your Stokes are going to have to go through 180 minute weeks, you know, the same as everybody else. And while our depth is bad for a, you know, title contending side, it's very good compared to most of the rest of the Premier League. And historically, the big teams tend to fare very well over the Christmas period because suddenly everybody else is dealing with that same fatigue and rotation struggle. And the big teams are much more equipped to deal with it. And so over this period, we only have Man City of the big sides to face. So it's not like, you know, we're coming up against, you know, Liverpool or United or the other big teams. So we should roll up points against these crappy teams and come out pretty strong. So that's nice, I guess.
Love the note of optimism from you, Ben. It's a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap it up for this return edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. Hopefully, we have a happier match to talk about after this weekend. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Gary Rootbeer, and you can find me on LinkedIn at Gary Rootbeer.
Okay. Michael, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
You can look for my vegan recipes at Brett Rainbow.
We should point out that you actually can go to brettrainbow.tumblr.com.
Yes, let's be clear about this. Brettrainbow.tumblr.com is a real website which was set up by a real person that definitely wasn't Greg.
It was an I hear that it was set up by an extremely handsome person who is not me. And you should definitely go look at it. In fact, it might have been Brett Rainbow himself, and you should all go check it out. And that's where you can find me online reading that amazing website that was clearly designed by a very handsome individual, brettrainbow.tumblr.com. Also, Skipjack at 0079 on Twitter. So for Ben, for Michael, I am your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.